So I'm going to start out just with a song and a little introduction. And I'm going to invite Pam and Susie. Are you both here? Pam, you're here.
Yes,
and Susie. And Michelle, I think you know this one too.
Okay.
Just do standing stone. That's the one I was going to do last time.
Oh, I found it. Some round is like.
Well, we found it.
Standing stone.
Do you want parts?
Yeah, we'll start at unison.
Okay,
so. I'll hold the
melody.
Do you want to go higher? No.
I love me. I don't
so find your way.
Grace.
So then if I forget the words, I've got three other people up here to rescue, which is a good way to do it.
I'll pass it. Okay.
So I love this song so much. It's become one of my very favorite in the repertoire. And it just hit me. It was given to me, really, Colleen taught it to us, who many of us knew and who died a little over a year ago. And she was the director of Women with Wings. And so this is a song when I was going through a really hard time that she taught me. And there's a whole story around this, but I won't tell you the whole story. But it's been an extremely important healing song for me.
I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you. I will be your standing stone. I will stand by you.
About threshold choir singing is the songs tend to be short, they're easy to learn, they're easy to memorize, so that people can take them to the bedside and sing them without having books or all of those things in the way. So I'm going to talk just a minute. This is a session on music and palliative care, or palliative. I've never known how to say that. Some people say palliative, some people call it palliative, but it's basically that time when it's about healing without expecting a cure. Does that make sense? So that's what palliative care is in all its different forms. And it may be medication, it may be music, it may be art. So many ways that that can be addressed. So what I have found, or what has been my passion, has been music in palliative care, because I've seen, it's been, I think in my life, it's what healed me. It's what continues to heal me. And I just knew that. Many of you know that too. There have been songs, there have been times you knew that the difference was a song, the difference was something you heard or something you sang. And I think in my life that has been that difference. And then I found that there's all kinds of medical research and all kinds of stories people tell about the miracle, truly the miracle of what a song can do for someone. So Threshold Choir specifically is about singing at the bedside for people who are seriously ill or dying. That is their mission. Women with Wings, our group in Bellingham, is part Threshold Choir, and that people do go to the bedside. But it also fills another need, which is it goes to facilities. Dementia care, it goes to homeless shelters, it goes to... what else? We're trying to go to prisons. We haven't managed to get into the one locally. But to sing with people songs they would know, bring instruments. So it's different professional choirs are all a cappella. But with the Women with Wings, we bring instruments, ukuleles. We've kind of started doing things with a local ukulele group and going in facilities. And Pam will talk about that. And Susie is part of that conversation. And then there's the Music and Memory Project, which I don't know how many people here were able to see that film. We showed it in the village on Wednesday. But if you haven't seen it, oh, please do see it. It's called Alive Inside, Music and Memory. And it shows, there was a phenomenon, sort of a YouTube phenomenon a few years ago, and showed this man, Henry, in a nursing home who was all curled up and non-responsive, hadn't really spoken for a long time. One of these folks you would see in a hallway at a dementia care facility, bent over, and then they got this idea of putting headphones on with some of probably family members told him were some favorite songs and putting it on him. And so they filmed this, and this guy's eyes pop open. He's speaking full sentences. He's singing. It's a miracle. And I think that's what music does. It performs miracles that could not be performed by medicine. So I'm going to have Marcia and Carol talk a little bit about that project, because they are a threshold choir, but they also have gotten involved with the Music and Memory Project really well, it sounds like. And then we have Miriam is, as I'm a certified clinical musician, she is Music and Healing and Transition Program graduate. They're both therapeutic music programs and different programs. So we have on the list of resources that you have, there are a number of different trainings. So I've asked Miriam to speak about her training, because the other thing I do or did was just go in with just me and guitar and play at the bedside as a therapeutic musician. So those mainly are what we're going to cover in this session, with just giving people different times to talk about it. And Robin is going to talk about the work. She's part of the Seattle Threshold Choir, and to talk about the work of the Threshold Choir, because she's been involved not only in Seattle, but very involved in the whole national network of the Threshold Choir. And when you go to the website and see the incredible resources, think of Robin, because she has been a lot of what has contributed to that. also, one handout. This is called Guidelines for Singing at the Bedside, and this comes from my work as a clinical musician. It comes from Threshold Choir work and from other work as well. Some of you got this last year. It really hasn't changed. So if you didn't get it or would like this, there are some copies here, and we can always make more. So I think with that much of an introduction, can we turn it over to you? Can we turn it over to you, Robin? Do you want to start?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
So we were just going to give a demonstration.
Good.
And I think that's worth just as a smaller version of what a bedside sing might look like. So we sing at different facilities, mostly. And so you go to a facility, and any one day you may sing to, you know, half a dozen people if you can find them. They're often not in their room, so.
Or asleep.
So they're on hospice, but they're still getting their hair done, you know, whatever. So, we don't know where they disappear to. So we would like one person who would really feel like that they would benefit from being sung to, who really would love to be sung to right now. And we're going to sing to you. So is there anyone who feels that would be?
Nobody. And maybe somebody who's never been sung to before.
Okay, well, I wanted to first offer to somebody who feels a need. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then let's
hear the
Lorraine. Okay, so yes. Lorraine is going to get in the chair. And one thing we do, and I'm really not going to give commentary once we start, I'll just do it. But we do actually come with our own little chairs to the bedside, because usually there aren't any chairs in the room, and we don't stand while we sing. It's really good if your heart can be at the same level that their heart is. That makes a difference. You know what? We've got to make sure there's actually room for us there.
Yeah, there's room on this side. I think we're okay.
No.
But we could, would you mind moving to where we were just temporarily?
Yeah, if you touch it everywhere.
Okay. Push on that. Push down.
So we don't need to move this.
Oops.
Turn that light on. There's another switch over there.
It's on the side.
Should I get these too?
There are Kleenex. Somebody have a Kleenex?
I'll go get some.
Lorraine has requested the church.
It is coming. So imagine we've just come in the room. And usually the way it works is that the chaplain, if you're lucky enough that the chaplain, or the hospital, a volunteer, will have already, you know, have kind of established that this person would enjoy singing. So it's really important, Thresher Choir, we sing to people who want to be sung to. So, you know, we don't go and just kind of like barge into somebody's room and start singing to them. So she already knows, she's expecting us. Her eyes are open, so she's alert. And so she knows that we're here.
Hi, Lorraine. My name is Robin, and I'm with the Seattle Threshold Singers.
My name's Jamie. It's good to be with you today.
Yeah, we're going to sing you a few songs. And all you have to do is just sit back and relax and take it in. And if you fall asleep, you would feel honored. There's nothing you need to do right now. Sometimes I go about feeling so alone, and all the time I am being carried on great wings across the sky. Sometimes I go about feeling so afraid, and all the time I am being carried on great wings across the sky. Sometimes I go about feeling sad and blue, and all the time I am being carried on great wings across the sky. Great Spirit, thank you for this life. It guides my path in your shining ways. Oh, Great Spirit, thank you for this life. That guides my path in shining ways. Oh, Great Spirit, thank you for this light that guides my path in your shining way. Oh, Great Spirit, thank you for this light that guides my path in your shining ways. Oh, Great Spirit, thank you for this light that guides my path.
That guides my shining way. Oh, great spirit.
Thank you.
Thank you for the light that guides my path in your shining way.
Lorraine, we'd like to come back and sing to you again sometime. Could we do that?
Yes. Thank you. You don't need a lot of words. but I think your question, Robin, before it was, what did you notice?
What did you
notice? It's a good question.
What I received in that, besides the beauty of the song and all of you, it's truly the blessing of presence. Mm-hmm. And that you brought the Great Spirit song there. It helped me to really, it was a song of guidance for me, you know, to walk in my love. No matter what I encounter, you know, just that's where my center is, that's where my strength is to walk in my love, you know, and in the light of love. So I received that message, you know, from the Great Spirit as you sang to me.
Lorraine, you gave that message to us to sing you that song. There was no plan for that song.
She's never even heard that song
before. I've never heard it.
it really just sort of brought it all home to me in that sense. And just that everyone sang too was so beautiful. It allows for guidance. Mm-hmm. To receive the guidance. Mm-hmm. And when we don't know exactly what the path is, mm-hmm. but to walk in the path of love.
Mm-hmm. I noticed a change on your face, because when you first sat in the chair, you were like, give me the Kleenex, take my glasses. You just released.
Well, and I you know, when you're doing the wing song, I had to wing. To move. So that helped too, to have that movement and sort of inner permission to let myself have my wings while I was being sung to.
I'd just say too that when going in, the only thing we know about the person, besides the fact that they're on hospice, is that we might find out what their spiritual tradition is, and that's it. We get a 3-second summary. I knew that she was, you know, I knew, but we had actually planned different songs, and you know, I mean, just let's sing blah blah blah. Okay, you know, and we. You know, in that moment, obviously, there was a different choice to be made for the last song. Mm-hmm. So, singing the bedside, there is that just sort of what Patty was talking about with the Quilt Project, just mm-hmm. being, like, open. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, what's being called for?
Yes.
And that mm-hmm. song just kind of burbled out of, mm-hmm. even though it's not a song our choir sings. Yeah. by a woman named Sudie, who was a NAACA choir. It's nice to know songs that can touch on each different path or situation.
Do you ever get the kind of participation from the patient that you got from Lorraine?
Oh, yeah, we get.
Wow.
Yeah, you never know.
And we're not really supposed to touch, as you know, clinically, we're not supposed to touch the person, but sometimes they reach out for us.
Right.
Or ask for that. Often they just go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes, as I'm so certain that this is new for me, it's quite remarkable to be with a person which you know is crossing over.
Mm-hmm.
They are talking to and being present with people who we can't see in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And the music allows them to be in that space. Mm-hmm. It's like a thin space.
They're in the mezzanine. They're in the mezzanine.
Mm. Mezzanine. I like that.
Mm.
We're in the mezzanine.
I like it.
It also allowed me to invite and feel the presence of my former partner who died, Jamela, to receive this in some way in her behalf, something that I would have loved to have shared with her, and I know she would have loved too. So I felt that that was a real healing for me in that way, to allow that spiritual presence of her, you know, to be here, and to share that in that way. That was true for me in that mm-hmm. scene.
Hmm.
Well, I think maybe for those of you who are not part of a threshold choir but are really intrigued about this idea, for how many of you is this a new thing or a new idea? Okay, a few of you. To know that there are threshold choirs in probably a good share of the major cities, and to get more information with lots of information about how to start a threshold choir and the practices that they do. It's not that difficult to start a choir. It takes time and attention, as some of us can attest, sometimes lots of time and attention. But it's you don't have to be a trained musician. I'd never led a choir before. I've started two of them, and I don't read music worth a darn. I am a musician for a long time, but I don't read music. And so people learned a lot by ear, and also by music. But if you're interested, you may also have a certain skill for organization, and you may have somebody else who has more the musical skill. So it's very doable, and I just want to encourage you to go to the national website and see if there might already be one in your neighborhood, or if not, do what Michelle's about to do, start one. She's going to start one in Chelan. So, yeah.
I think it's important to say that, at least my experience of being in Threshold for just 2 years now, that probably 75 or 80%, maybe more, of our time is spent learning compassionate voice training, being singing to each other in the chair, and singing to and for each other, and holding up names of people that we bring to our circle who need healing. So it's the practicing of presence with each other that allows us to carry that spirit to the bedside.
Yes. Really, really well said.
And whether you would ever visit the bedside or feel ready to, that in itself is giving a gift to those who will.
Yeah.
The rehearsal time itself is such a sacred place, and the harmonies that develop out of the rehearsals, all a cappella, are just there to die for.
Well, that could be our new bumper sticker.
There to die.
whole demonstration of what this work is. That was just beautifully done. Thank you very much. And we're going to take some time now because I think our session just goes to 2:45. Does somebody have a schedule in front of them?
It's 2:45.
Until 2:45, is that correct?
It's 2:45.
Yes. So I would like to ask if Marcia and Carol, would you talk about Music and Memory Project?
Sure. I'm probably the one with the most experience. So actually, our threshold group, which is 8 people in Pullman, Washington, we took hospice training and then we took hospital volunteer training. And some of us took patient care a volunteer training, which is a little bit more in depth. And part of that was seeing the movie Alive Inside. And we had just witnessed, you know, through our singing at the bedside of the dying, what wonderful things come through music and loving people, that this was just another modality, I guess you could say, that just sounded, well, of course. And we were still on this kind of high, so we said, oh yeah, we'll coordinate this project too. So it was the volunteer coordinator at the hospital that showed us the movie, and she's very interested in music, serving the patients and serving our community. So she had $600 left in her account from the hospital auxiliary, and you need $1,000 for the training, the music and memory training. Look it up on, if you look up musicandmemory.org, all the information is there. And the rest was filled in either by friends of hospice or more hospital auxiliary money. So she had to spend her $600-something by the end of the year. So she said, you know, we thought, this is the time. This is where we need the money. We don't know where to go with this. We need to know how to do this. And so if you watch the movie, or if you've seen Henry on the YouTube, Old Man in Nursing Home Hears Music, he's in the Alive Inside movie. And you see these playlists on a small little iPod shuffle. The smallest ones are the easiest to control. You put your playlist on their favorite music, attach it to the earphones. There's basically the go button and stop button, and there's volume, but it's the easiest shuffle to use. So when we paid our $1,000, we received 10 iPod shuffles, 5 were new and 5 were used, and 10 headphones, and 3 webinar sessions with the social worker that set up this program. And technical help for a year, and then we received a manual on a zip drive with every question you could ever ask about setting up a music and memory program. So we so far have only actually we've only gotten so far. We've collected the iPods. We some of us have done it on our own, practicing on our own family members. I've done it with my mother and her boyfriend. He's Puerto Rican, he's 99 years old, and I put, you know, Cuban salsa and Puerto Rican music. But first he said, this makes me homesick. But my mother then could listen to all the Beryl Gaither music, you know, that she experienced and had very happy times in her life. So we needed a designated computer at the hospital to store all these songs that come from iTunes. So you can, we have been collecting CDs of people's favorites. Like I collected my mother's CDs that another of her boyfriend gave her, old classical westerns. My mother is 88, so I know the songs she likes, and I know a lot of her friends like this too. Gaither music, cowboy music, anyway, then you just
jazz,
right, big band. Mm-hmm. So we've started collecting these, and these are being stored on this designated computer at the hospital, which the hospital just donated to this
cause. So it's kept in the office of our volunteer coordinator at the hospital there. And when you work with the hospital, every little step, like getting some designated space in a cabinet to store these things in, might take forever. So we've gone into one roadblock after the other. So now things are stored in a cardboard box under Jessica's desk. You know, the 10 earphones and the iPod shuffles. You know, ideally, when you see the webinar, they show you different kinds of storage ideas for these. Might be a push cart, which is locked with something lockable on it, because these are very small and could walk away very easily. So in the hospital setting, we would have a volunteer come in, create a playlist for a patient, and then they would see to it at the end of the day that this is locked up again. We're also talking about having some standard iPods ready to go with maybe relaxation music, maybe a classical music, maybe Western. We'll probably poll people and just, what kind of music do you like to listen to, and kind of see what comes to the top. And there's music for children. Children come to the hospital. There's all kinds of things. The possibilities are endless. So because we already had this in with the hospital volunteer coordinator, it just came together just very quickly. But it's, you can do this on your own without this help, but it's, then you have certification, they protect you, they've spoken with lawyers about copying all this music, and so they give you guidelines about what's legal.
Tell her it's Apple products.
Yes.
Because of Apple.
Yes, Apple products, right. So if you want to add something, yes.
Well, so they use iPod shuffles, they use the Apple products, because the way it's set up legally, the download can be done and then you can use it more times. Whereas if you used a PC product or what's it called, Pandora? If you use those things, then the copyright's not protected. And so that's why it's the Apple thing. And they go into more detail on that on the webinar.
And our hospital actually sends out volunteers into our adult daycare in town and also to our nursing home. We're a small town, Pullman, our university town. So we got special permission that those are kind of satellites from the main hospital to utilize our designated computer and our library of sort of music in all those places. But it would be most ideal eventually if those places could have their own library and their own people overseeing this, just for logistically working with their patients. So are there any questions?
What have your experiences been?
So we are just getting this up now. We really have yet to actually utilize it, other than there have been secondary ways, like with my mother and her boyfriend, and actually, even without the iPad, one of our volunteers, Ginny, works in also every Wednesday morning is at our nursing home, and she ran into one of the patients there who was a classical pianist and just was longing to hear music. So she didn't, it's not set up there yet, so she just couldn't go pick it up. So she went and found some pianist playing Chopin and got it on a CD player for this woman who just hugged it to her chest. You know, it was just so thirsty for that gift. Mm-hmm. So it's the same idea. Mm-hmm. So it's so powerful when you hear that. So.
Often the music, as I understand it, for the patient is most powerful if it's music that they learned during their time of cogency, when they were first, you know, adolescents growing into adults.
Yes, I would think.
And most active with their music. I think for a lot of us, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it ties in memory-wise.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a stage to interview the family or to try to find out what their favorite music is, and that's the music you want on your list. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is a step in the program. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So, yeah. If you see the Alive Inside movie, they're working with dementia patients, and there you see, like with Henry, who had not been able to be verbal, this just went to a deeper place where he could actually converse with people and tell them what music meant. And there were other examples of that in the film, which were. So that's in our minds. That's our dream.
And people became less combative, too.
Yes.
It's which was an amazing benefit as well. And some of them came out of a deep dementia and were able to communicate or interact with people.
Yes.
Well, the decrease in drug use.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so I think originally this was especially made for dementia patients, either to give them pleasure in their own home or in the facility where they often are combative when it comes to bath time. And so the staff are so grateful for a calmed patient, a calmed, happy patient.
I'm trying to imagine putting headphones on a combative patient.
Okay.
Truth.
Yes. I think I've heard some about working up to, making it a process of getting them used to it.
I have a comment. Part of Colleen O'Rell's legacy was to start such a program in Bellingham, and her spouse and partner found Music and Memory and has put that into place. And one of the first instances in which we have used this connected with a hospice volunteer who would monitor at the bedside the activity while they were listening. The family had downloaded music that the woman used to sing with them. And so the daughter brought in an iPod player so everybody could hear it. It was no longer just on the earphones. Mm-hmm. So they could sing along with the mother. And this might answer the difficulty of the headphone being applied to a patient that didn't really
That's
want
a good idea.
Part of that.
Yeah.
So, and it proved to be a very valuable experience utilizing the additional tool that's all available for the iPod.
Yes.
In the movie, there was a wonderful experience of teenagers that could come in who were very adept at the iPod music and relate for the first time with the elderly. And they could really engage with these warehoused people. Such a bridge between.
In fact, we thought this would be a great senior project for kids in high school.
Yeah.
So there's a couple potential situations like that.
Well, thank you so much. We could talk a lot longer about it, but it's really good to hear more details about how that's working. Well, thank you. So could we hear from Pam and Susie? And I don't know, mostly Pam and Susie, I think, are here who have worked with Women with Wings in the various facilities. So with dementia particularly, but other populations as well. So could you two talk about that?
We could. A lot has been said already about the importance of the music when we are growing up, when we're young, when we're courting, when we've become young parents or we're going through school. And a lot of the repertoire we're finding is not as old as we think it is. It's moving up on us.
For somebody who was pretty much a classical folk musician, I'm having a little problem with the rock. That's the reality check, and that's where we are. And so as a director, I'm finding YouTube is an absolutely invaluable resource for songs that give me not only the chords, but I can print out the music. And so you can easily create an extension of your choir utilizing those tools. And it's proved very, very helpful. We have sort of a bridge of people now that are from the Korean conflict. They remember the bomb. They remember Jelly Roll Morton, but they also know about George Benson. So we have a huge schism of interest in what we're doing. And we get a lot of Jim Croce requests, which I think is interesting.
Time and Bob.
Time and Bob. Joni Mitchell. When we go in, they're in their chairs. For instance, in the long-term care facilities, particularly, you've all witnessed this. And so we usually start off with I Fly Away, which is a spiritual, very upbeat. Although, if you listen to the lyric, it's really telling them about that next door that's going to be opening for them. But they love it. They start to tap the foot. They get into it, and we find that we're more successful with the upbeat songs. They want that, even if it isn't even of their generation.
It's a toe tapper.
And we had an opportunity, it happened about 2 months ago. We were asked if we knew the White Cliffs of Dover. And fortunately, one of the chaplains there knew the piece. The woman had requested it. And so she started it out, and she taught us the song, and then we shared it with the rest of the group, of the gathering, in the song circle. And it turned out the woman that requested, and as I said, we never know what generation or what history someone might have. But I know at 60, I have a lot of memories. This lovely lady at 85 years old had been a Royal Air Force pilot during World War II. And the British, like the Americans at that time, did not allow women in conflict. What she did was she flew the planes to the various stations where they would need to be in Scotland and Ireland, Wales, and so on. And she would shuttle these planes back and forth. And that was something from a very dynamic, important time in her world. Her country was being bombed, and that's how she kept in her thinking her world alive. So that's what we bring to that. And it's, I get shivers when I think about that.
Maybe talk about how you organize it. Do you bring your songbooks?
Yes, music. We do. And I want to thank Susan Bradley, the lovely lady in pink. Susan has picked up the baton and helping us organize our songbooks. And Susie, do you want to share some of the repertoire gathering that we were able to achieve?
I can tell you a little bit about where we go.
Okay, so I want to hear you.
We have facilities that we gather together.
Turn up the volume.
We have a few places we assemble, usually monthly. The drop-in center is for the homeless in Bellingham. And we found lately that we need to sing more Led Zeppelin. I'm really sorry about the guy.
Leonard Cohen.
These folks are homeless. And they're allowed to come to the drop-in center and rest and eat. They serve them a meal in the evening, in the late afternoon. Anyway, one day this wonderful young man came to us and he saw the guitar that Pam was playing, which is actually from Colleen. Colleen's presence was all around that day, I'll tell you what. He spied that guitar and he loved it so much he came over. He had to leave because he was crying. He came back and said, I really love to touch that guitar. Well, Pam handed the guitar over. He proceeded to play amazing guitar. We're talking Led Zeppelin. He was playing Stairway to Heaven. He was playing Freebird by Leonard Skinner. This is the rock and roll stuff. And he was very, very troubled and in pain because he had just gotten out of jail the day before. So this is a wonderful opportunity for him to know what he could do. He wanted to get his own guitar. And it lightened up the whole place that day. The drop-in center was just everywhere. Just smiling. The people that were sleeping on the couches woke up. It was so fun to see everybody so engaged. And a month later, I think it was about a month later, this fellow came in again, and he was totally different. He was all cleaned up, and he had been attending drug-free sessions, training, which they provide in Bellingham for the homeless. And he was just looking so good, and he wrote a song. And Pam gave him the guitar, and he played that song for us. It was about Jesus, and thank you, God, I found my path. And I'm back on track. He lost his home, his family, everything to drugs. But he was getting better. And we go there, every time we go there, we still see him.
Yeah, he's not on staff. He's part of the staff. He works in the kitchen. Serve the foods. Yeah, what they do is that when they graduate into the program, they become part of the community. They're building community through the Lighthouse Mission. Lighthouse Mission is nonprofit. They take no monies from United Way or from the government. It's completely from the hearts of the people and the community.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It's completely funded through the hearts and spirit of people in Bellingham and outreaches who are aware of their activity. They also are the only respite community that offers a 24-hour intervention from the time that many times you get incarcerated and then they send you to hospital. They won't take you till you've had a certain time to dry out. Mm-hmm. And they're the only ones that have 8 beds available in a secure situation for these people to be able to come down about 24 or 48 hours before they can go back to hospital and get the medication and process that they need.
And I think it's pretty busy.
It's amazing.
Too. Drugs are pretty rampant in Bellingham. They're awfully close to Canada. Mm. And there's some stuff crossing the border all the time. But getting away from the drop-in center, which is wonderful, one of our favorite places to go. Also, we go once a month to a dementia care facility. There are 2 levels of dementia. They have the you know, manageable people.
And then assisted living.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they have one in the same place.
Yeah.
And there's an area of the house. You know what it is.
I do.
It's Silverado, it used to be.
Yeah, my mother was in, used to be.
Before Silverado.
Merrill Gardens, and yeah. Now it's a Marist. Same thing.
No, Merrill Gardens is another one.
I know, but it used to be that. Okay. So they have a locked Alzheimer's ward.
Yes. Right, exactly. So we go to the dementia unit there, and they usually have brought them in by that time, and they're, like Pam was talking about, how they're sleeping, and they're hanging back, and they just finish their lunch. And we come in, and we're singing, and we start with the guitar, and we sing all the songs they love. Mm-hmm. They might not know their names, but they know the songs.
Yeah, they do.
They know the hymns. Mm-hmm. And it is so fun. We can get a little bit rowdy. We usually do a little dancing. Pauline started that one. She is so uninhibited and such a spirited person. And I'm sure we will always, being here, those of us from Bellingham will bring her name up a lot. Because she has been dearly missed by all of us. But her spirit is all over us. And anyway, so that is a wonderful place that we go to. We go also to Adult Day Health. I heard you mention that. And that's fabulous also. These folks have their lunch, and after lunch, we get to engage with them. And we don't, it's unlike Threshold in that it's interactive. You know, Threshold, which we do some bedside singing also. I'll get to that in a minute. I'll get to it now. I'm sorry if I'm bouncing on everywhere, but I do. We go to the rehearsal of the hospital chapel at St. Joseph Hospital twice a month, actually, and we rehearse.
We have a song circle, much in the same vein as Jamie pointed out. It is for solace and comfort and healing for anyone who might be in the hospital, and of course for ourselves. And we call them song circles in that venue.
I forgot what I was going to make a point about.
Okay.
Oh, well, I consider that as being more bedside singing.
Yes.
It's more, I mean, obviously, well, that's not true either, because sometimes the patients, it was sing for can join in with us.
Mm-hmm, they do.
And they do. But that's more, well, it's not as lively. Let's call it not as lively.
Are you working with hospice?
Oftentimes. Oh, I was going to say the chaplains.
So that makes
hospital,
a difference.
Yes. The chaplains of the hospital will ask around if someone wants to be sung to, and they'll tell us. But we can, after we rehearse,
or sing for ourselves. We can go up upstairs and sing at the bedside if needed. And we also sing at a place called the Leopold, mm-hmm. which is pretty upscale. Those folks are really, they're very active. And they, in fact, suggested the list for us. A couple of us took our pens and papers and wrote down the names of all the songs they wanted to sing. And that's when the organization on my part started.
Yes.
We got into printing them up because we go into the Leopold, for example, the War With It living situations, and we sing with amongst them. But we needed to know the words to those songs too. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we were having trouble with that. We had a disconnect there for a while. It was a mess. We were unorganized. So I thought, well, hey, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, eh? That'll work. So always, I'll be loving you. Always, that was very nice. And love that's true. Always. back to what's a beautiful song from Casablanca?
Oh,
what was that?
Time goes by.
Time goes by. Yeah. Oh. Hey, that's what time goes by. As time goes by. Yeah. So we go in with into the people that are gathered and sing along with them. Mm-hmm. And it's really fun too.
We do have to be careful in those environments to make sure we get all the verses, because sometimes we only sing two or three verses, mm-hmm. and then there's somebody in the back row.
You forgot
the fourth and the fifth.
And I will say, Pam, I love how you handle the whole thing, because you're Pam Hooper here is a talent to be reckoned with. Banjo, guitar,
yeah,
musical lady. She plays the viola, actually. She's classically trained. But she just lets it all hang loose with those. And she can just play chords. I used to play guitar in my other life, one of the other lives I had. I couldn't do that. But spontaneity is
we're
in order. So it's really fun to get loose. And those people love it so much. It relieves, so for some reason it came to my mind, it relieves sorrow and loneliness and boredom. Mm-hmm. Those folks are bored. And some of those people can't come to the festivities. That's why we always go to their rooms at Silverado, for example. Or wherever it's needed for us to go.
The one important thing to say when you're arranging something like this to go into a facility is to let them know, and this is a lesson Threshold Choirs had to learn, no, we are not the entertainment.
Right.
We're not coming there to entertain. With the Women with Wings, we bring songbooks, we hand, you know, work with the song circle, we're singing with them, we're interacting with them, we are not entertainment. And of course, Threshold Choir sometimes finds themselves in a situation of going to a place and they say, okay, we're wheeling out all of the patients and you're going to line up here, and we have to say, no, that's not what we do. So it's the same thing with this kind of singing. It's not entertainment in the same way. We're gonna run out of time, so I'm going to move on, but thank you. It was a great overview, and I love how that keeps expanding of the places that you sing for and the different ways you're finding. The one thing that I was working on before I came up here was to get us into the prison and have song circle with the women in prison particularly, but they just did not have the facility or the room to do that yet, but hopefully it's something that can happen. I want to take just a minute to talk about with Miriam, and I think Simi, you too have done singing at the bedside. I would like to hear from them, and I want to share one quick story, because I was also did my internship at the hospital in Bellingham as a clinical musician as part of my training. And just one quick story, which I went to, I was going kind of room to room, which is never the best, but when you're interning and you need patients, usually a nurse would go first and poke her head in and say, hey, would you like a little music? And they're going to say yes or no. Again, you always want to be invited in. So at one point, she was too busy, and she said, well, just go ahead and ask. So I poked my head in a room, and there was this guy. I swear he was a biker dude. He was classic. He had tattoos all over, you know, the ring, the hair back. And I think, oh, this will never work. But I poked my head and said, would you like some music? And he said, sure. Yeah, okay. You know, so he's sitting up. And I start playing and humming and some lullabies, some very quiet songs. And pretty soon, this dude's kind of his eyes are closed as sinks down and he falls asleep. That to me was like, wow. It was just one of those little moments that just I held precious, because you cannot ever walk into a room with any assumptions whatsoever about this patient and what they may or may not want. This seemed to be exactly what he needed in the moment. Mm-hmm. But I want to hear from the two of you. So the work you've done. So.
Music for Healing and Transition program, you become what's called a music practitioner, and it's usually a two-year program. You have to write book reports, and you have to attend a series of trainings over, you know, a lot of them were in Wenatchee, actually, so I would go from with a friend from Seattle to Wenatchee. It was really cool. And then there was some in Penticton, up in Canada, which was also very beautiful. I'm not familiar with your program, so all I can speak of is this program. When Robin was talking about being on the same heart level as the patient, or the resident, whatever, I heard that first from Chalice of Repose, the Thanatology program in Missoula, Montana, I think. The Music for Healing Transition is a pretty comprehensive program with some medical, there's a medical side to it, so you learn how to read in some measure, obviously, in some measure the monitors, like if you're in intensive care and you're playing with someone, you can read those monitors so that you know where the patient is, and you know. And there's a lot of, there's some training in psychogeometry, and so they go way, way, way back to, you know, the monotone thing where you have this Greek instrument that had one tone, and by hypotenuse, who was that guy who,
Pythagoras?
What?
Pythagoras,
yeah, they go back to Pythagoras, right, mm-hmm. And they trace the building up of music for thousands of years, and they teach you many different, Stella Benson was teaching many things about different modes. She's a harpist, and she would teach how to improvise at the bedside. Lori Riley was always wonderful musicians who play, and it was just really being amongst kindred souls, people who feel this calling to be at the bedside. And I've always thought that was the highest calling in the world. So, you know, to be there, my God, what a blessed time, you know, when someone is passing or someone's in critical care. I guess the biggest thing for me in terms of, and so my experience with Music with Healing and Transition, becoming a therapeutic musician, I did that at a hospital, so I know what you mean about, you know, every little thing you have to like clear with this and clear with that. And I played for in a hospital setting for 9 years in a cancer center. And the one thing that came to mind when you're playing in a hospice or in critical care, you can become exquisitely sensitive to the people you're playing for. And we were trained to sense their breathing and sense that when they yawn, for instance, that was wonderful. That was the best thing they could do because it's a release, you know. You want them to release. And if they fell asleep, Baruch Hashem, which means praise the Lord. You know, so, yeah. And all about service. You know, we're not performing, we're serving. And that was, that's the core, that's at the core of this program. And I'm sure it's at the core of the program we took. Because that's what we're doing. So I guess my one remembrance is playing for someone and getting a sense of the when I'm playing guitar, when someone resonates with a song or some notes, I know that that song is being received. If the song isn't, if a person resonates with the song comes out in a fuller way. Mm-hmm. It's more resonant, it's more full, it's more, you can feel the resonance around you. Mm-hmm. If a person doesn't like the song, it's thin, it's not enough. Mm-hmm. So being aware of that and getting to a place where you can feel, I play a few notes, and if, sometimes in critical care you want to play one note, and that's all a person can handle. Mm-hmm. So you play one note, and if that note really resonates, you'll know it. And I've been in situations where I played one note, and it's like, it's been that release and that resonance, and it's just been so fulfilling.
Mm. Well, I have a little bit of my background. I've worked for 27, 28 years as an occupational therapist, and I worked for Swedish in their hospice program for about 6 years. And I noticed before, because I want to preface this with Miriam's been a great influence and got me rolling into singing, at the bedside and to in retirement homes in New York. But at that time, while the whole time while I was a therapist, because I've been a lifelong musician and singer, I noticed when I work with patients who have strokes, with severe spasticity and couldn't communicate, or people with Parkinson's, that if I used music and, and I could tell what kind of, some get agitated with music too, so you can't use music with everybody. But the people who are receptive with music, if I combine therapy with singing, that they would relax. And the therapy would be much more beneficial to them when they relax. I could get their spasticity out, work it out, so I can, range them or do whatever I needed to do. And with Parkinson's, walking people with Parkinson's, because that's a very difficult thing. And also with self-feeding, I noticed if I used music, that they would get into, if it was a certain rhythm, that, with Parkinson's, if you know anything about Parkinson's, they'll have these kind of wide gait, short steps, and they'll start, and then the steps will get big steps, and then they get shorter and shorter and shorter, and they're going faster and faster until they fall. Mm-hmm. And when you use music, and a lot of therapists now, back then I would sing, but they put headphones on people with Parkinson's, that they'd have a steady, even gait and mm-hmm. go longer, and so I would take that. So the rhythm would take, the rhythm would take them on. So when I met Miriam, And Miriam invited me to go to some of the retreats with Healing for Music in Transition. It really got me interested in that. And we sang at a couple of nursing homes together. And then moving to Skagit Valley, I was asked to sing. We sang a couple times together, but then I wanted to go further with it, and I started singing on my own. And I noticed, that being a therapist, I couldn't just be entertainment. I had to interact with everybody, and I'm not going to repeat because it's the same things that Pam knows. It's all the same. But then there was one dementia care place where I was asked to, because I'm a yoga instructor also, and also I've recently had more craniosacral training, and that teaches you to be really sensitive to people's rhythms also. And all of that combined, when I worked with the people in this dementia care, it would just be short, 20 minutes. They said, teach these people yoga. And I'm going, how am I going to do, you know, yoga as you all think of yoga? Well, I took a singing bowl with me. And where did yoga come from? And we call it cat pose and dog and, you know, fish. And so that's, I took it down to that level. And I would start with a singing bowl, because a singing bowl, the sound of the singing bowl, would just ground people and bring them into the present moment. And then we would start to do animal sounds, because that will get people to breathe. And, and there's nothing more primal than doing animal sounds. So, meow like a cat. And you know, it's like doing almost a yawn when you meow like a cat. And then, after that, they were ready for music. And I did a lot of familiar songs, but I noticed there was one woman, and you worked with her too, I think, because it's the same place that Miriam has worked in. She would just almost be in a fetal position, and you'd get nothing from her. And as soon as the singing bowl was there, her eyes would fly open. And then we would do the animal sounds, and she would just remain alert. Like a lot of times, and you've noticed this too, some people, the only way you don't know, you know, whether they're receiving anything or enjoying it, but sometimes there'll be just a little finger twitch in time to the music, and you know that it's in there. And with this woman, you know, when her eyes were flown open, and she would have that little movement of going with the music. And she even talked sometimes and asked for a certain song, which totally surprised me. But and like Pam, it just totally expanded my musical repertoire. Every, you know, the location of the facility, like one facility was more, you know, big band music, and another facility was all country gospel. You know, I had to learn country gospel. And I learned to like it. There's just so many stories, because I've done that now for 12 years, so, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This is great, and I hate to say our time is over, but if we could close with one song, and actually I was kind of thinking, Ron, if you're interested in leading only this moment, would this be a good time to close the session with only this moment?
I just wanted to make an honorable mention for the drum in this discussion, because I have found, you know, in times that I've been with loved ones or people in their end of life time, that singular tone. Mm-hmm. It's not about having a really active, happy, upbeat drum. It's about really the heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And just the resonance of that, of this, the skin of that animal, living there. And it's overall just extremely calming for an environment, you know. But it's really, it needs to be soft and sparse, not active. And it's really quite beautiful as another tone and feeling to bring in. Because this brings feeling in to the
elemental.
Yes, and it's elemental.
We're going to have a session, I think it's tomorrow, on healing songs. And I'm hoping we're going to hear more from all of you who have healing songs to offer, and I know you all do. So do you want to do
it? Have only this moment. We have only this moment. We have only this moment. Will you take my hand? We have only this moment. We have only this moment. We have only this moment. Moment, will you take my hand? this moment, we have only this moment, we have only this moment, will you take my hand?
Yes, I'll take your
hand. Yes. May the circle be open.